This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Off the ball, GAA.
Do you know, do I miss being at the matches and going, do you know, being on the bus? And you do a bit, or do you miss the thing? But what you miss is the journey. Do you miss planning? You know, as I said, like the 2 weeks now after the Limerick game came up, the Waterford game, they would have been so enjoyable.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
We're going to start with Roscommon. Connacht champions came back from 6 points with, I think, of just about 7 or 8 minutes to go after a Galway goal. And they have stopped the five in a row for Galway and Connacht. We were speaking to Donny Smith before the game on the show, and he actually was saying that the Connacht is a big match and they definitely do want to win it. But he was saying that, you know, a team isn't counted as a big team until they get to a semi-final. So that's what he wants to see. But I thought the Roscommon team were not as good as potentially they could have been, but they won. And that's what you need to do when you get into a Connacht final. So what do we think?
Legendary stuff. Yeah, like proper end-to-end madcap roller coaster adventure. Super, which is exactly what we wanted from... Yeah. It was 8 points early in the first half as well. I think it got out to 8 again towards the end of it. It was insane level comeback. And just like the daring do and the bravery to keep going in the end.
Yeah, like it felt, that'll probably get lost in it a little bit as time goes on, but the comeback itself was so impressive. Because, you know, when Comer comes on, you kind of feel like Galway have a foothold in this game now. It's going to just fizzle out. It was a great game up until now, but right, things are going to get wrapped up here. But to come back, like Darragh Craig off the bench, misses a point, I think to bring it back to 4 points, I want to say.
And then
but then to hit
two.
The two-pointer off the left foot, yes. Yeah, like you say, legendary stuff.
And I think
some stars are born from that team as well this season. Like, there's some real, real talent, particularly in the forward line.
I think the fact that Galway played well, like as certainly their forwards, their marquee forwards were pinging them over from 100 yards out, like, and Conroy was doing Conroy things, like, oh, this, and rampaging fullback is up. That is, okay. Then, you know,
Shane Walsh off both feet.
Yeah.
He's good at football, isn't he?
There was obviously a big win there, and that helped Roscommon's comeback, but some of the points that Galway got in the first half, like, you thought, like, he's, Clifford's one obviously was amazing yesterday, but Conroy and Walsh, I think, probably both hit two from further out. Some of the point kicking at the moment is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
That 2 point, it's like whatever about the one that they kind of like set up along the arc, that's one thing. That's a kind of a set play almost at this stage, and you're kind of getting used to it. But the fact that it has encouraged the 55 meter shot that nobody would have taken 5 years ago is just the best thing about it for me. Like, you know, it's just the fact that we can see people kicking the ball that far and that accurately. I think Galway actually did play well. I think that's and I didn't know that until yesterday that Roscommon could beat them.
They played well. Yeah.
So, and I like, they'll take this out and it's like, right, grand, five in a row would have been nice, but season starts here. You like to think they'll get better. You know, that was their first real championship test. Obviously, it was Roscommon's second. And it looks like players are coming back and they have close enough, as close to a full compliment as Galway have had in a while. Like, you know what I mean? When was the last? They obviously need the two matches back. Like, but...
And
you know, Johnny Marr and Comer both been, like, those two lads, like, never played the same team. Like, you know,
be favourites, heavy favourites to be Kildare the next day in Salt Hill.
You'd have to think
definitely.
But just circling that back then to Roscommon, you know, the fact that they were able, I thought, like, the fact that they were able to hang in the game with those two goals in the first half when Galway were on fire against the wind, and then, just that, like, it. For me, it felt like Galway had weathered the storm. It was over. Before the goal, even, when Sean Kelly hits the crossbar and it goes over and pushes it to 3 points, I kind of felt that was that. And then when the goal happened, you were like, forget about it, and turned on Arsenal. And just didn't, and they just hung in. How lads are still making the mistake of losing the 50-metre free, though. Did Comer genuinely not hear the whistle?
That's what he was saying. Yeah.
It's such a harsh punishment, I think. Out of all the rules, I think that's the one I dislike the
but
most.
But you have to stop now. Yeah. Like, it's almost like, harsh or not, like,
yeah, exactly.
You can't just give away 2 points like that.
I do think there was some tactics at play from Roscommon picking to go against the wind for this exact reason in the first half.
Choice,
they play a running game anyway, so it's kind of suits them anyway. But I think they thought, if this game comes down to the wire, if there's a couple of points in it coming down the stretch, that having that wind is going to be vital. And I mean, that's what really happened. If they didn't have that wind, they weren't scoring those 2 pointers. And
Munster got hammered recently for doing the same thing, didn't they? Against, who was that against?
Doing which?
Picking against the wind.
Yeah.
Oh against Exeter.
Yeah.
Well, that's a team that wasn't playing very well. The Scotland at least are in great form, and it actually tactically made sense to, you know,
Connacht did the same thing.
Great running team
against Munster.
We have some reaction from the Roscommon camp if you want to hear it. So Tommy Rooney was at this game and he was speaking to Dylan Ryan after the game on the pitch.
Dylan Ryan, what's it like to be a Roscommon man right now?
It's unreal. It's unreal, Tommy. Look at the scenes here. It's class. I don't know how to describe it.
Incredible stuff. An unbelievable game of football. It looked like Galway kind of just about arm wrestling it away from me. You got back on top. Talk us through it.
They did. They did, yeah. Galway are great champions. They won the last 4 in a row.
There's a huge Michael Gavis contingent here, right? Talk to us about this Roscommon team. What was different about you in 2026?
I don't know, we brought a bit of pace into the team. You've seen that Heenahan's there, Dara, when he gets going robbed, they're lightning. So it's hard to defend that one-on-one. So
Dara was absolutely incredible in that first half. The runs from deep, he creates a goal, scores one, buries one in the second half. His finishes are so good. He's really shot the stardom in the last couple of weeks.
He has, even against Mayo there. Like,
come on, Ross! Yeah!
It's so hard to mark, like, you know, he's an unbelievable player. So.
Look, it's a unique achievement for you. You've won a minor 20s and a senior All-Ireland. It's the first time Roscommon have ever done it. You're in a really good place.
We are. We're just taking it game by game, really. Like, look, it's unbelievable to win this. It was one of our goals, but now going into Tyrone, that's a different competition, but we'll enjoy now a few days, to be fair.
Class.
Yeah.
Class. So I said it was a reaction from Dylan Ryan. I think it was a reaction from Dylan Ryan and another sort of
county Roscommon
fans. I love the man who walked behind him, who could well have been a relation or anything, but that, like, he was just like, he was not in any colours or anything. He just tapped him in the back with this big proud smile. It could have been his dad, like, you know what I mean? They were great though. They mentioned Dara Heenahan there. When we were talking to Donny Smith, you're talking about, like, you know, them losing him and Kieran Murta, two legends of the county in the same year, and yet it seems like a forward line that's nearly got better, and it's like they are just producing these unbelievable forwards constantly.
Bizarre.
And the thing about Roscommon was they had that there in this, like, and this isn't a knock on it, because like they won two Connacht's, like, say in the Anthony Cunningham years and all, but they were so frustrating to watch because you felt they had all this talent, but they used to play a very negative style. Yeah. They were hard to watch at times, like, you know, and they just weren't kind of, at least it seemed, getting the most out of what they could. And now it's just like, let them off, like, you know. Yeah. And you see someone like him yesterday who could have had 3 goals only for the save for the first one, and he's absolutely superstar, like.
And now their reward is a home game against Tyrone, which is tricky. They will be favourites for it, but
Tyrone have been 6 weeks.
Long grass in it,
yeah.
They'll be strong favourites set. Moving on to the next one for performance.
We've got strong favourites now. Nice, they lost by a point to Armagh, who have won every other game by 20 points since.
We'll see. Next one we have, a nice easy one. I don't think we'll cause any controversy here. It's VAR and its decision to overturn West Ham's equaliser against Arsenal. David Raya seemed to be fouled by the VAR.
Yeah.
So David Raya was fouled, but definitely loads of other fouls. I was thinking about this. In the NFL, they have this thing where two separate fouls on either side offset.
Offsetting, yeah.
And away you go. Yeah. It's like, sometimes it's a gross injustice because one foul, like, they're killing someone and the other one is like a minor hold. But in this instance, it did look like it was a stereotypical Arsenal attack. We've seen Arsenal do this to other teams all season, and that might be one of the reasons they're in the situation they're in at the top of the table. And suddenly to start refereeing this now seems...
I don't know. I have to say, I'm watching it with a bias of, ultimately, look, I mean, it's not a bias against Arsenal. I'd probably ultimately pick them. I'd want them to win the league if it came down to it, but don't really care. Would rather a race, rather it became a dead heat again. Would like West Ham and Spurs to be a bit closer. I wanted it to be a goal. I did. And you watch the replay a couple of times and you're thinking, live by the sword, die by the sword. Arsenal of all teams can't get this against them. And despite that bias, when you look at it, like it was more of a foul than you normally see. Raya's hand is being stopped from going to get the ball when he's in position to go and get the ball. He's also been pulled from the other side. Yeah. That's the kind of one I think you get away with the pull. I think the hand pulling down his arm as he tries to catch the ball is too much. And that is a more relevant play to the cross that comes in.
That's your
Rice tackling your man into the net from 8 yards, which was a bizarre thing to do by Declan Rice, let's face it.
I don't know. I get your point and I completely see why VAR overturned it, right? There's both things can be true at once. But at the same time, do we need 25 to 30 replays of something to find out whether it's a clear and obvious error? That's the real reason.
But I don't think so. And I think it's because they didn't want to overturn a goal that was going to change the season for both teams.
But that's not the point of it. The point of it is, like, what is VAR for? It's for clear and obvious errors. There's 7 or 8 different fouls in that penalty area. Do we need to have, if you're looking at something for 30-odd replays, is there a clear and obvious error in that? And
I think the reason they looked at it 30 times was because it was clear and obvious from the first one they saw. And then
they just back it up.
They just had to make sure they were right and took probably too long for it. I agree with the sentiment and the point. I just think in this case, what could they do? Like, you know, it was dragging and pulling and all. That was the relevant foul. The reason the goal was scored was because Raya was fouled.
I think the wider point in this is that, is this what we want football to be? Like, do we really want a situation where,
in terms of the VR or the
VR, the replays, the constant Match of the Day had a referee on last night. Is that really what we want with football? Is for this, it's like a referee's industrial complex here that we've got going in the Premier League. Like every single weekend we're talking about referee indecisions. The referees have made this game their game. Football is supposed to be played by the footballers on the pitch, not refereed and re-refereed and referees deciding the title. That's the situation we're in right now.
I think it's slightly
harsh. As football fans, do we want West Ham to be relegated and Arsenal to win the title based on a refereeing decision?
Yeah, for sure.
But that would have been a referee. If Arsenal hadn't won the league, that would have been because of a refereeing decision.
A non-decision is a decision.
Of Cavanagh not making it. But that's not a non-decision. It's a wrong decision for him not to give a free out there.
Is it clearly a wrong decision, though? If you look at that replay and you see the foul from Declan Rice, the multiple fouls by other people being pulled all over the place, is there the one foul out of that?
And again, it's Arsenal who've benefited this for more than nearly anybody this season. But like, they've created a game where it's like you can't hold down a goalkeeper. Like it's the goalkeeper's box to come and claim the ball. You can't hold down his hand. It's a playable part of.
You do appear to have been able to do everything that
I don't. This is extreme, though.
Was it?
I think it was extreme. I can't believe this. Like.
I think it's a foul, but at the same time, you see them not given every single week in 8 out of 10 games.
I don't know. I think you're not giving credence to the fact that this was a little bit more than most. And I think, by the way, if we want the game played differently, everything like that, they should all be fouls.
That's much better. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think Ryan Manning must be looking at that going, what? Anyway.
Ryan Manning?
Yeah. You're saying the pullback, you get away with the pulling of the jersey. He pushed the guy over.
Yeah.
I think there's something more egregious in the box. With the current rule set, that's always going to be given as a free out, like 10 times out of 10. Because that, you can talk about Arsenal and the culture they've created around corners, but that they haven't done that. They haven't been yanking goalkeepers' arms. Grabbing a goalkeeper's arm and dragging it and pulling it away from the ball. I don't think that's happened.
I've been good at being off Twitter lately, but I did sneak on last night and there was an annoying Villa Twitter thing about like Gabriel's goal against Martinez, where, you know, in the Emirates game. and where it was a foul on Martinez. And it probably ultimately was a foul, but there was an element of like a screen grab and you're like, look, double standards. Now, it was a different situation. They were both going up for the ball together and Gabriel is probably a little bit too rough and it's just about a free. Mm-hmm. But this is, everything has been set up as, look what Arsenal do. I'm telling you, there is a difference between literally holding the arm of the goalkeeper down. That's an obvious foul. That's not a judgment call. If it was, say if it was that Gabriel Martinez incident, right? And it went to VAR and they looked for, you know, a 30 look thing to try and disallow the goal. That's when, like, the sentiment of what you're saying, I couldn't agree more with. I just think this actually was a clear and obvious error.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm not batting for Arsenal or anything. I just think, and I think this is an absolute cancer in football, this kind of corner nonsense of just lobbing the ball in and just getting
seven or eight
top
fouls,
of the goalkeeper. Yeah, I think it's awful.
Pure piggery.
But, the player who held down, the player who held down Raya's hand was being dragged.
Yeah,
by two different players from what I could see.
It's ugly to look at.
Yeah.
But I just think it's probably the most egregious thing you can do in the
box. So you're saying VAR is in the green because it's correctly identified a foul and
shouldn't exist.
The true justice has been served. In fairness, if this hadn't been given, there would have been the same outcry.
I just don't think West Ham can be too aggrieved. I think they were unlucky, played well. They've done their damage earlier in the season. I think they lost this game and they were unlucky not to get something out of it. Like, is this any different than an unbelievable Gabriel block on Callum Wilson a minute or two before? Do you know what I mean? It's like they didn't score the goal.
They missed point for West Ham means Leeds are now safe.
Yeah.
Which means they've nothing to play for against Spurs tonight.
Yeah.
Which means Spurs are going to win tonight.
Spurs have Chelsea away and Everton.
And West Ham, still be going for
West Ham are playing shambolic Newcastle and I've forgotten who they're playing the last day, but it's a winnable home game. Mm. Spurs Leeds.
Oh yeah, on the beach. There
you go. Spurs win tonight, I don't think it's over.
Oh, it'll be a tough one.
Oh, it'll be miracle stuff, but could West Ham win both games and Spurs lose both?
Yeah. Don't want to go.
How funny would that be?
Don't want to go back to the VAR, but Darren Cahn was the assistant referee on Match of the Day last night, and he suggested a fix to this would be banning 6-yard box entries at corners.
Oh God!
Which
don't know if you do that.
Stop changing the game. Maybe that.
Yeah,
maybe
that
might be the just start calling fouls.
But this is what I'm talking about. The referees want to change the game to suit more refereeing decisions.
Yeah,
it's not your game.
I think the referee should just make the decision there and then. He sees pulling even before the corner is kicked. You can see they're pulling and dragging out of each other. Just call the foul then, or sort it out at that point.
Enforce the rules that are already there.
Yeah,
and this will stop being such a problem at every single set piece.
That's the main thing.
Next one we have. You mentioned them at the start of the show, Jared, but I will give them a proper mention here. It's Celtic, who beat Rangers on Sunday morning. Deyzin Maeda with an incredible bicycle kick to secure the game for Celtic. They are now within 1 point of Hearts, who drew with Motherwell on Saturday night. And there's games this week. Celtic are playing against Motherwell.
Hearts have Park, isn't it?
Yeah, and then Hearts have Falkirk.
They were bottom of the top six.
Yeah, they're safe. They're getting into the top six with their season secured. Motherwell, the best of the rest, some would say. They beat Rangers in the post-split. They drew Hearts in the post-split. So it's definitely not a bygone that Celtic will get the win this week. But there is also the interesting situation where Jean Askew is the Motherwell manager. He is favourite to be the Celtic manager next year. So will he want to be favourable with the Celtic fans this week? Who knows? But it sets up an incredible end to the season on Saturday. Hearts against Celtic. Celtic have the home game this weekend against Hearts. So very, very tasty in the Scottish League.
Taking a Celtic hat off of, like, you know, yourself and the majority of our listeners, there's something kind of almost disheartening if Celtic go and end up winning this league, just from football's point of view. You know what I mean? That they can have such a shambolic season and Hearts can be leading from, I don't know, week two, you know, all the way until the last day of the season, and then Celtic just go and beat them in Celtic Park and catch them at the last hurdle. Yeah. And Hearts this season has been so amazing. Like, every single time I check their games, there's red cards for both teams, there's everything, they're sneaking 2-1 wins. The resilience of their season has actually been unbelievable, because they're not still player-wise or finance-wise at the level of the other two. So there is a football wants them to win, obviously, like, you know, from the neutral point of view. But at the same time, Martin O'Neill's story would be beyond incredible as well for him to rescue a double, perhaps, like, you know.
Celtic haven't been top of the table since September.
Yeah.
So they could sneak in here.
One thing on that overhead kick, though.
Oh, it was, the context of that goal makes it even better, because Daizen Maeda is genuinely one of the worst finishers in the world. he's such a good player and such an interesting player. And Sky Sports were describing him as inconsistent. I'm not sure I would agree with that. I think he's a very consistent performer. But I think the consistency of how good of a footballer he is each time he gets the ball is the disparity is incredible. He could be absolutely dreadful or world class, but that bicycle kick, like,
you get. There is something, though, that, and it isn't to downplay it because it's an unbelievable goal, but it's so much more satisfying when it's from the stand, the TV stand side of the box into the far corner. We wouldn't be looking at as many replays if that was scored the far side into the near corner. It just wouldn't look as beautiful.
Yeah.
It was just the trajectory of it right into the top corner.
Perfect celebration for that type of goal as well. He just kind of collapses to the ground. There's no, like, he's not trying to be nonchalant. He's not trying to play it cool. He's like, oh, that is class.
Martin definitely deserves some credit for his turn in form as well, because, I mean, we were at the point where at the start of the season, he literally had his locker cleared out and he was leaving the club, and Celtic pulled the plug, and there was just months and months of despair from Daizen Maeda. Definitely played a role in his form this year. Martin O'Neill has clearly got into his ear in the last couple of weeks to say, listen, just finish on a high, and his form has turned around. So I would put, with my Celtic hat on, I would put Celtic in the green here.
For sure. No doubt.
Yeah, for now.
See you next week. Until Wednesday, perhaps, when Motherwell come to town.
And also Rangers, like, you know, should be mentioned.
They should be mentioned in the red. As red as you can get, really.
Doing what they do.
To lose.
Giving their fans a little bit of hope and then making them the most miserable people on earth.
To lose your first three post-split games. Like, that's where the Scottish season can destroy you. I should mention, you said it was disheartening about Celtic potentially winning the league now, but the split is one of the best elements of the Scottish league in terms of making it competitive for the last couple of weeks. Now, if Celtic are 15, 16 points ahead, it's null and void, but when you get a situation like this, that's where this is for, where every single game is jeopardy.
I will say as well, I don't know if we've given enough credit to the Scottish Premiership, like, over the last, like, obviously it's a two-way race now with two games to go, but it was genuine three-way title race for most of the season. There's very few leagues in Europe, if any, that have had that this season. I don't think any, actually.
Yeah,
maybe Italy for a little while before Inter ran away with it, but yeah.
The next one up, we have Richie Hogan for his phenomenal catch on Diego. I've watched this multiple times. I still can't tell how he did it or if he actually did save someone from getting a clatter there. But it was Kilkenny could have been doing with him over the weekend.
Hey, so this is obviously during the Kildare game, is it? Kildare Galway game the previous day?
Yeah, they were down in Walsh Park.
Oh, they were down.
It was a doubleheader, so I don't know which game. I don't know which game they were commentating on at the time. It probably was Kildare Galway. I think it was early. It was during the Cork warm up. Sorry,
right?
Because it was a Cork player that hit it down. Cadogan said they were aiming for him. So it was during the Cork warm up before the Cork Waterford game. Beautiful catch. I initially thought it had come from the side and it was coming over the head of David Burke and Cadogan, and he just put up the hand to, like, save Aisling O'Reilly's life, which was incredible, obviously. It was incredible in itself, but that would have been a phenomenal piece of peripheral vision. The more I saw it then, I think it did just come down on top of him and it was a ball down the field, say. Now, at the same time...
You're not that impressed?
No, I'm very impressed. He still had the wherewithal to drop the programme so he could hold on to the microphone. Put the hand up.
Oh, wrong hand as well.
And then just throw it away. Just not
the way
even.
He throws it back.
He's just so casual. Yeah. Like, I'm not selling it whatsoever. Like, everyone else can lose their head, but I'm just standing there.
Yeah.
This is what I've been doing on my life, lads.
So what do we think about Kilkenny then? Because in all seriousness, I mean, I'm kind of torn on this. Like, Offaly are a good side. So it's not like this is an incredible result that's blown out of the water. And Offaly are definitely coming.
Well, it's the first time since the 90s that they haven't beaten Offaly in a Leinster Championship match.
Yeah, 98 All-Ireland Finals the last time Offaly beat them. So this wasn't on TV, which I think there's a few comments about GA Plus and stuff like that we might get to in a minute. But, like, I do think that, like, there's limited games in the hurling championship, and I know they can't show everything that because that's the deal. But I'm kind of not sure why it's the deal when GA Plus is so expensive.
But everybody says GA Plus is cheap. What do you mean it's expensive?
But is it? It's €95 for an organisation that doesn't have to pay any rights fees. And ultimately, there is some other games, obviously, earlier in the year, but ultimately you're buying it for a three-month, four-month championship with a limited enough supply. It doesn't, like, as much as we're saying, it has the best games and, you know, in some of the football things, obviously the majority over the course of the year of the biggest games are on RTE. So if you're thinking that you're paying around about between €35 and €40 for Sky Sports, with the vast majority of Premier League games that they're paying in the billions for in terms of TV rights.
That's an interesting point that I haven't really heard.
I think you're getting a very similar amount of value, but obviously the outlay isn't as much for the GEA as it would be for Sky.
So I think you make a good point that it's £95 for a three-month season, because everybody else is going, oh, it's £95 for the year. You sign up for the year, you do it
and
in advance.
It is for the year, and there is stuff on. And there, look, don't get me wrong, there are people who will use the GEA Plus for everything it is worth and will watch every last game that's on. And, you know, but that I think that's something that's available in a lot of forms for the hardcore, and that's great. But there is also people who do want to just watch the games. And I just, again, it's not that it's like, you can have a debate whether it should exist or not, or whether there should be a paywall in the games and so on, right? But if there is, fine, it exists. I think that it's a bit steep, and I feel like that isn't really being talked about very much. And it has gone up as well, and there was no discussion about that. And as soon as the GEA made their, you know, split from RTE, they put up the price. I feel like they get away with very little scrutiny. You get, like, John Milan will be on screaming about nothing being behind a paywall. But I think, actually, if you're getting into an actual conversation about it existing or not existing, fine, you'll have the live lines and so on. But I think the actual how they've gone about it, how they choose games, how they are, what their offering is for the GA fan around the country, I don't know if we get into it in that kind of detail. I think that there's a lot. I think most of the GA pundits are like, you know, we're on board, or the GA journalists, I suppose, are like, we're on board with this, so therefore you get very little scrutiny.
I think my viewpoint of it is slightly warped, because I had it when I was abroad, and it was fantastic value.
Oh, definitely.
Because you can watch pretty much everything you want. So for viewerships abroad, it's fantastic. For Irish, you know, I'm not so sure. Maybe it's not worth €95, but at the same time, you have to give them credit in the sense that they do put on a show. Like, it's not as if it's €95 and it's a blanket one camera setup.
Oh, like,
and there's an argument to be made of, like, why are they doing that? Like, do they necessarily need to do that? Are they encroaching in on other broadcasters that way? There's that argument as well. But yeah, I think I always go back to the value is grand for people who are going to pay it anyway. But it's for the people who wouldn't know how to use it properly and don't necessarily, you know, it is that paywall element of the older viewer that wants to watch the GA. They're not going to pay €95, and they're going to miss out on so much of the season. So,
yeah, Edward Freeman in the comments there pointed out that the URC season in its entirety is €40, which, like, different sports, different competitions, you can make your argument on which is more exciting, but, you know, less than half the price of a GA season. I don't know. I think you're right, though. I think if you are a fan that's going to watch every single game that they put on, it's well worth the money. But for the majority of us, they may not watch every game from start to finish. If you're just tuning in for the 3 months of the championship or the last month or whatever it is, it's fairly steep.
I suppose my point would be, like, there's an argument about paywall or no paywall, and should the games be behind anything. And there's no doubt that there are more games televised despite the lack of Offaly Kilkenny, which we should get back to at some point, because of GA Plus's existence, right? And that's kind of fine, and I completely agree with that. And I also don't necessarily think, and say when Sky were around, I wouldn't necessarily have said that you can't have any games that people have to pay for. The vast majority is still there in RTE. I do think it is worth questioning as to whether the GEA operating this themselves and having that interest as to what games you put behind you know, controlling their own TV deal and them being a part of that TV deal, I think it's just something that I would question. This isn't the NFL. I don't want to hear about what they do in other countries. This is the GAA. This is an amateur organization that are custodians of our games, right? Surely we shouldn't be paying the same as we're paying per month for as we do for Sky Sports. Surely there should be some kind of like subsidizing. You know, we're not here. They're not here to make a profit. They will tell you that obviously they don't. They're not a profit-making organization. It all goes into grassroots and so on.
Well, they do make surpluses, but at the same time,
you don't put everything into grassroots by scalping the people who are your
volunteers,
but also not even your volunteers. The fans of your sport, the sport that like keep the game going. Like the crowds around the country the last few weeks have been unbelievable. Like, you know, I just think that, and we can say, oh, well, people go to games and all that. It's not necessarily about the fans. We want to watch all the games. You know what I mean? I'm not a fan of either Offaly or Kilkenny, but I would have liked to watch that yesterday. Anyway, there we go.
What's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen?
About what?
Well, so
nothing.
There's a new rights deal up in 2027.
Oh, they'll ride it out.
Oh, no, they won't just write it out. They won't be paying attention. It doesn't matter to them. What's going to happen in the next rights deal?
I think they'll be reluctant to go much further than they have at the moment.
Maybe for that one, and then the one after that.
You think so? You think they'll be looking at taking everything but like the list protected rights off RTE?
Why wouldn't you? Because at that point,
again, you're custodians of the game. You're not there to ride people for 100 quid a year so that they can watch your sport. Like the game will die. The game mightn't die at club level and within volunteerisms, but look at cricket in England. If you want to see what can happen to a sport when it goes behind a paywall.
Well, the counter argument to that, of course, is the Premier League went behind a paywall. It's never been bigger.
Football's the biggest sport in the world. It is the counterpoint to all arguments, but it is also...
And the GAA in Ireland will feel like...
Exception that proves the rule.
They're in a relatively strong position when it comes to something similar. You know, it's culturally significant. In a way, the cricket was like... not quite the sport of the people the way... I think
a lot of people in England would disagree with you on
cricket's, I think GAA is not on the margins like cricket was. GAA is the most popular sport in Ireland.
But I think that the most likely outcome here is that the vast majority of games will sooner rather than later, and that might not be this rights deal, which will be more than likely 5 years, but the one after that, the vast majority of the games will be on that plus. At which point maybe it feels like value.
Yeah, but again, I just think, value-wise, fine. You're getting what you want for it then, and that's okay. But the price could be 200 quid by that stage, but who knows? I would still say that the idea that our games would be sold from free-to-air TV, taken away from it, I think people would have to genuinely question the GAA's capacity to run the games at that point.
Are
they doing the best for the sports that they're the custodians of? They don't own Gaelic football and hurling. They are a governing body for it.
Well, they would say they own every aspect of it.
Okay. Well, they don't own the women's versions of them yet.
No.
So they don't own the sports. They're a governing body.
Yeah. It is an interesting philosophical conversation. We'll come back to that later on in the week.
Anyway, Kilkenny and Offaly, right?
Yeah.
Again, we only saw the highlights. The one thing I'd say is I watched the Kildare-Galway game, and Kildare were brilliant in the first half and Galway couldn't get going, but it felt like an element of Kildare kind of bringing Galway down to their level slightly. You know, like it was a slightly slower pace and that can happen. You know, that, and when Kilkenny drew with Carlow a couple of years ago, it was exactly that, right? This felt a faster game. It felt more like a championship game, and might say a little bit more about Offaly, who, don't forget, also drew with Dublin a couple of weeks ago and gave Galway a really good game in Salt Hill, where nobody gives them a good game. Gave them as good a game as Kilkenny did, and fell away at the end. So I'd be just interested to see now. Offaly are playing Wexford next week. If they beat Wexford, they've got Kildare in the last game. Kilkenny would have to go and beat Kildare and then beat Dublin to qualify if Offaly win both those two games. This is a very, very real situation for Kilkenny at the moment, and I don't think people have quite realised it yet, because they're playing Dublin in Parnell Park. Dublin, I thought, were poor enough against Wexford, I have to say. They beat them kind of handily. They were always ahead by 5, 6, 7 points.
And look,
but the game itself wasn't great, and Wexford just hit wide after wide after wide after wide and still ended up down to 3 points at the end, pushing for it. So look, it just the end of the Lens Championship is actually just going to be fascinating.
Yeah, like I think there's an acknowledgement that Kilkenny aren't at it this season, but it probably won't be until something like that happens, a situation where like they don't actually make it out of Leinster. Where it's like, oh, geez, this is actually a problem that needs to be addressed in Kilkenny hurling.
And likewise, hopefully need to go and actually beat Wexford next week as well. Say they could, you know.
It'd be interesting to see what happens in that Wexford game as well for Offaly. Like, that is a real marker to see where they are this season.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we'll run through the last couple.
Richie Hogan in the green there.
Really quickly. Richie Hogan's in the green for sure. Last two I had, Ireland women's rugby. They beat Wales at the weekend. Don't know if you need to go too crazy about this, Dara. As you said, this was a game where Ireland were expected to win.
Yeah.
And they won.
There's something to be said about being comfortable in uncomfortable circumstances, and that's what Saturday evening was for the Irish team. Started very slow. It was a slow game in general, very stop-start, and it felt as though, like talking to a couple of journalists during the game as well, that, you know, Ireland weren't willing to show their hand too much. It feels like there's a bigger game coming, even though they had to win at the weekend. They couldn't slip up like they did last year in the Six Nations against Scotland in the final round. But it did feel like we were playing with a certain game plan that was kind of basic enough. We're keeping the pitch narrow. We're reluctant to get the ball out wide to reach the edges. And it wasn't really until that Aoife Way for offload to Bevan Parsons towards the end of the half that it felt like, okay, now we're starting to play a bit of rugby. Till that point, it was very pick and go. Conservative kicking game was very, I find it kind of odd. Dan O'Brien was kicking down the middle, keeping the ball in play, which was actually kind of, it was hurting us a little bit in that first half. They switched up a bit come the second half, and the second half was a much better performance. But even still, there was a 15-20 minute period where nothing really happened. But look, there was a few standout performances as well. Aoife Wafer, we say it every single week that she plays, but I put it to a couple of people in the press conference, I don't think we quite understand how good at rugby she is and how good she's getting. She's over at Harlequins now, and she's getting that kind of real, you know, professional rugby playing English internationals week in, week out. She's getting that experience now, and it's really you can see it in her game now. She's come on so much, even from last year, and you know, at the weekend, it was a great example of that. She was just breaking the line at ease in that second half and just creating everything. And it's so rare that, you know, a number eight would have so many involvements in tries like that. Like, it felt like everything was going through her. And like, look, there's players all over the pitch. Brittany Hogan scored two tries, had a great game. Erin King, the other back rower that started at the weekend, obviously the captain, she played very well. I could go through the whole team, but I don't know if you saw it. There was an incident involving Clona Maloney McDonald where she kicked one of the Welsh second rows, Georgia Evans, on the ground. She got a yellow card. If anyone saw this, let me know what you think. But I thought it was a stonewall red card. She got away with one. But she's one of those players that plays on the edge. And sometimes, I suppose, that just comes with the territory.
Yeah.
But yeah, now next weekend is the big one.
Yeah.
25 plus thousand in the Aviva.
I think we'll put Ireland in the green for that.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.